called Eagles, Skies and White Noise. The eagles among us soar and sway, present their wings in such a way that forces inhibitions inward. The anti-clockwise words you speak are from here on in null and void. Take my pillar, take my coin, take every last word hurled with a callous smile. Your remarks are from the dark ages. Your stark nature stands out like a starved bear when you roam our streets. For you, sir, madam, I could not care. You take the wood from the trees, relieving us in a hurry, leaving us all but bare. Do you see the leaves that sing? Best believe you'll see the roots that take their sweet time to grow. Analyze that it is you call sin. We hold ransom what it means to truly win. Why hold cost of what's been and being? The finely tuned minds of the future will soon be seen. The burst balloon you find at your doorstep will lead to a dream. The worst cocoon you find yourself in will be hell as it seems. How opportune that the walls should close in. Steady but fast, with sweat dripping, you've met the black cloud that sometimes hangs around. Draws blood with its fangs, renders you deaf to all natural sound. Blind to all things profound, yet you find a gap in the cloud. As all of these terrors amass, black to grey to white to blue, who knew? Vital to remember the clouds pass and eagles sway. And there are many types of clouds and birds at play. Note to higher self, if needs be, pull entirely back from the crowd. Inner circles that follow pompous pretense serve no place for your chosen future. Misled and misguided principles are toxic and spread like wildfire. Yes, I will gladly take my leave. And when my true self meets solitude, out of pure relief I breathe. Passing thoughts, ideas, notions, interpretations, all easily conceived. Behind closed curtains and doors, in my personal bliss. Ever observant of shining toys, supreme awareness of all manners of white noise. Thank you.
Next up is Jim Crickard.
This is called My Mother's Wedding Dress. Before the divorce, I remember my mother's wedding dress. It was kept in a drawer in my parents' bedroom, which always felt like a museum to my child eyes. Vials of perfume catching sunlight, an array of makeup on the dresser. I was not allowed much entry there. I had offences from eating lipsticks. I was granted access, supervised, and I asked her to unwrap the dress from the plastic and show me the dress that made her into Princess Diana. In that photo outside the church, she held the same limpid gaze I'd seen in the papers, the same feathery light hair, the same small nose of a bird. As the dress came out of the plastic for its first breath in 10 years, I wondered about my mother's taste. The shoulders puffed out like wedding cakes. It reminded me of a doily. Time had dyed the white fabric beige, but I remember her say, "Your mother was beautiful that day." And she came close to show me the pearls and the buttons. They had dulled, but I felt the warmth of her body at my side, and so I smiled and I told her it looked beautiful, and it started to. A while after my father moved out and our house had turned quieter, my mother was doing a clear out. I remember the hallway packed with boxes and black bags, and I saw the wedding dress pouring from a seam, asking to be saved. I thought about taking it, but I knew Mum would see. So I pulled one pearl off the shoulder as a keepsake. I felt guilt defacing the lace. The threads didn't want me to take it. I placed the pearl on a plastic plate on my bedside table, which had my face printed on it. I left it there, and minutes later I returned and saw my mum come through the threshold of my room and give me a look as she passed by. When I saw the empty plate with my own face smiling back at me, I understood the look in my mother's eye. Those times are gone. I went outside and I saw the wedding dress on the lawn, like a corpse, strewn among milk cartons and old boxes the makings of a fire. I thought about rescuing the dress, but I knew that my mother's look would turn into a conversation containing the word divorce. I wanted to leave that word where it was, inside the walls, a crack in the bones of our home that we never talked about.
Next up is Isabel Balaguer.
Hey guys, first time I really love this. This poem is about a man pissing into a river outside of Soberlin. I was about to watch the river and be like, I'm gonna smoke and have a nice time, and it's evening time, and the lights are all pretty. And then I said, I better go home because my aunt is waiting. And then I missed my bus anyway because I saw this man pissing, and I wrote a poem. So. Grown men pissing streams of gold until the river overflowed with stains of barley flavored mold. As it comes creeping up dark walls, reflect its eerie green soft calls into bright colored streams of light. That couple snuggled, hug and watch, and dream of futures in adoration, in blissful unawareness that the foundations of their dreams come flowing from hot steaming streams of peace.
Thank you, Isabel. Next is Charles Clark.
I should probably have some donuts. While I was writing it, I couldn't but think of Hardy's famous at Castle Bockrell, one of the greatest love poems in the language, etc. But I'm afraid we never got there. Castle Donovan. We were at Castle Donovan, my sports commentator and nephew, Ken Brown, and myself, a square, emphatic, well-placed pile north of Drimaleague. Donal of the Hyde built it in the time of the first Elizabeth. In the lush green field hard by, grey pony lifted his head and gazed. He would know us again. He had proprietary rights here and now over Donal's knocked about castle.
Ray Henderson. I wrote this one recently. It's called Cock Steps. My father used to say in the spring's evening gloaming that the day had lengthened by a cock step. Several weeks later, with the conditions out of doors become much sweeter for work, he would say the day had lengthened by two cock steps. Such an idiosyncrasy in the counting of time impressed the child in me and caused me to wonder how to relate these cock steps to the seconds, minutes, and hours of conventional reckoning. He is gone now and is necessarily silent on this relation, but today I still look out the back door of my apartment each evening in the spring sunset and wonder how many minutes make a cock step.
That's right. Next is Philip Spillane.
Thank you. This still work in progress, and I'm still making changes to it. Yeah, it's a work in progress, as I said. Okay. When at some mobile tombs that migrated each solstice moon, they caught its light in their gaping yawns, their trunks called it back a spirit song. The tusks were seen as obelisks, monolith guards to a passage that's bruised and scarred, with petrograms and labyrinth maps of tomorrow's memories. A mobile tomb frozen on a clay wall of woolen giants that drudged sun lines in its wake, its fate written in its interior. Thank you.
Julie Aldridge next.
This one is for one of several friends who I've lost of late. So it's called Go Well. As I reach the curve of the foreshore, I am shaken by an aggregation, a towering eruption of gull and crow above the shingle, in a fallout cloud of dark charred and ash white wings. The beat of feathered thrumming breaks into my abstracted mood, splintering the mellow moment as seagulls split off to the tide line and the crows blacken the shore. The following morning at low tide, the bleak strand is scoured clean, a bare slate, unchalked of avian life, until I come upon a dozen juveniles, windblown, occupying the slipway. As sentinels on duty, the seagulls stare fixedly into the middle distance, a fleeting interval before takeoff. Bands of colour break the sky in half, birds weaving dark and spinning light. Depleted hedgerows gasp for spring. A startled thrush ruptures the thicket. Shrieking, a pheasant skims my head. Random thoughts interrogate, replay unintended and inadvertent actions, trammelled visions of dismal endings and ugly scenes of watery inundation. Some days after your bloodless death, I make my peace with the sea, release my cache of 60 gorse flowers for you.
Next is Patricia Walsh.
Thank you. This is called Prayer in the Dust. Ready for exile, minor hordes permitting, wanting seats fulfilling a lower order, looking aside at a complete exercise, sticking through television, wanting nothing done, with any sort of solitude captured in the deep. Exalting solitude yourself, be that as it may, biblical capitalism brings out the possibilities of future happiness unfolding as it should. Liberating pets from their owners, darling shot, spread eagle on the floor, liberated by divorce. Wrecking what's desired, never eating here again. Place on the headphones and no one gets hurt. Nodding to the beat of an introduced artist, quickly becoming commonplace, blown away. Any semblance of decorum, a goodly show. Any cartoon with violence is fair game. Sickly manuals hidden in the encrypted. Burnt as is right, an adoptive endeavour. Bound to the raucous, a legal adoption. Crafted alcohol, not getting any better over time. Explaining for every pleasure, a wasted corner. In lieu of payment, drinking on the sly. Fascistic abstentions, a straw too far. Lady death through abuse, singularly buried, through charity of strangers, dimmed by due course. Thank you.
Thank you, Patricia. Next is Seamus Harrington.
Thanks, Ben. Cook's Northwest Passage. Cotton plateaus and peaks and slopes, puffed and fluffed on ephemeral plains, deserted. Icarus I view, ice caps, burnished, tawny, fractured and crusty. How long more can this last? The midnight blade hacks into a ledge to find purchase under the overhang. An avalanche of immense whiteness starts to crumble, then tumble in sweet silence, slipping down the sheer face, past stalactites, will-o'-the-wisps of fraud, down frosted floes, to land across the mouth of the fjord, the wedge shape of attrition eating into those honeycombed caverns, those canyons, pale as egg white, down into blue, glazed flats of Wedgwood, baked Alaska.
Next is Cedric Peacock.
Dan. It's 4:30. The dogs are up, waiting. The light I just switched on hurt. I let memory guide my body, nerve by nerve. My pants slide up as I pull them, stretching my back muscles. Reaching for the leashes excites them. I can open my eyes now. There's the door. The dogs run out as I waddle into the cold, the wind blinding me once more. I can't wait to turn back and slide into the bed, curl next to her warm body. It's too early.
Next is Mary O'Connell.
Thanks. I intended to read this last Tuesday because it would have been very close to Valentine's Day. And this is a rather personal poem. It's called Bitter Valentine. And it's not at all funny. As the day draws near, and I walk past shops displaying, there are so many bears that wear their hearts up front, badges of blazing love. Blinking, I turn away. Bears were our special joy, though of the polar kind. I came upon you late, yet slipped so easily into the life we made. It seemed we always knew a flare of recognition would guide us to our lair. The Millennium Bear I gave you, we named him Amund after Amundsen, keeps solitary vigil on my bed. His stylish navy cap reminds me of the one you used to wear each time we set out on our trips. We drove all over France, your mother's birthplace, spicing our repartee with Gallic sayings, trotting out spoonerisms as we bemoaned a lack of ram or watched a bird of prey dive down in one foul swipe. There were moments of dismay, as when the Fiat Panda stalled, climbing above the snow line on the col they called Bonnet. Those sun-filled days slid downwards as time locked the workshed door where once your hands would magic coils and broken wires to life. Time forced your powerful frame to wedge into a wheelchair and then into the wicker coffin they lowered into the cray. The bears stare out at me as if they know the awaited day will be my first without you.
Sun on my back. I will paint doors and window frames and our noses. I will sow beds of roses, drop her in the soil and tell her to grow a while. Then I will be back before sundown. When the sun goes down, I will be high in a hot air balloon. The baby will cry. I won't hear her.
Next is Mo O'Connor.
Hello, it's a recent poem, this time, on recent events. There's a shooting atrocity in America. And I lived there 15 years. I wrote a poem years back after the Sandy Hook atrocity. I sent it to Obama. He sent me a lovely letter at the time, but unfortunately he could do nothing. He tried. So this is an acrostic poem. I don't have to, I'm sure, explain it to all the London people here. And it's basically a poem where each letter of the first letter of each line spells out a word, and the word in vertically is a. National Rifle Association, and the poem is called NRA. So here it is, very short poem. The introduction is longer, actually. National Rifle Association, AR-15, taken Virginia, in God we trust, Oswald, no change to the Second Amendment, Lennon. Right to bear arms, insane plea, Florida, Las Vegas, Edmund Post Office. Aurora, Sandy Hook, Sutherland Springs, Orlando Nightclub, Columbine High. In the interest of safety, all citizens should take up arms, ensuring no one will take away our guns. National Rifle Association.
Sometimes in dreams, I see myself walking in slow motion towards myself. In slow motion, ignoring the buildings exploding behind me, looking cool and calm, not unlike Van Diesel or Jean-Claude Van Damme. But unlike Jean-Claude, I do not have gigantic testicles of titanium. For Shane, instead, I have countless medals for cowardice hanging on my wall. When I saw the fear and the pain in the eyes of my 7 children after we had just buried their older brother, I knew they would need me to be there for them in their coldest, darkest hour. But I chose to kill my own pain first. And the pain around me grew bigger. Ethyl alcohol, main pain, killer of choice, straight from the top shelf, double measures, money on the counter, no words spoken, glass drained before the shame and the pain came back, drinking like a lunatic, already too sick to see the carnage I was inflicting until the day I stopped. And in its place, I started to down fire water like 17 lunatics, all out of their minds, all at the same time. And my children watched as the man they once knew as their father unraveled and disintegrated into a hollow ghost of a thing. Neither able to communicate with himself nor with anybody else. And when something breaks so bad, only a fool would try to fix it. Better instead, gather those shattered pieces of precious trust, wrap them in a shroud, place it on a pyre, and let it burn to the ground. Better instead, hope time might prove kind, and from the ashes of that tobacco, something else might incubate, something clean, uncontaminated by neglect. Better instead hope that those children now grown up with children of their own will continue through the power of love to entrust their precious loved ones into my care. Better instead hope that something new that sprung from the dust will continue, go on, and perhaps someday overshadow, at least in some small part, the terrible sins of the past when they were so cruelly denied by their father, when all they needed was for me to be there for them in their coldest, darkest hour. Sometimes in dreams I see myself walking in slow motion, and the pain around me no longer grows any bigger. Sometimes in dreams I see myself in slow motion.
Next is Mark Street.
I had a sound to make sure I was the tune, so I'll do something from my memory. And I've done it, it's a 5-hour challenge that I didn't get to do on the night. So it's an old diva for the book Middlesex by Cassio Eugenides.
Oh, yes.
And I might have read it once. So staring at the shade of his hybrid locks, golden roots and carrot tips, it's time to face his fans, and he touches up his scarlet lips. His gender marks slowly in transit. They'll expect no more than my Vion Rose, enough to shake Piaf from her sad repose. A peek behind the velvet curtains, it's time.
That new rat pack from Ireland's uncovered sneaking pack. He was out there, he's jotting nervously. He's dodging the roaming spotlights of tunnel. Funnel hides in a moving, darkened tunnel. I guess curious mothers have to know. No secrets left in my stateside, peep show. Nowhere to hide, sweet hermit enslaved to Aphrodite. Give me sugar, baby red papa honey. Cry the corporate bulging totes and their seats perched plumply. You see, I can't read my writing. Their seats perched plumply. Morphine for the feeding masses. And Lady M to doubten my own fragile senses. The pain of a monochrome light. I am a person of colour. Hair of gold and russet lips. My lips promise of scarlet. Cerebral thoughts haunt and pulse our star. Tune them out to mind the punter for their silver dollar. Okay.
Next is Alana Matthews.
This is called The Shape of Sound. I want to feel the shape of sound. I want to pluck its strings and rub its back when it cries. I want to sit in its mouth when it laughs and feel its colour shiver me through. I'd love to climb in a harmony and travel down a sonic highway, waving flirtatiously at a melody not too unlikely reed. Or perhaps I could ride on the cusp of thunder and be thrilled and torn and flung about by a dirty wet rain cloud, wearing oversized tartan and a crooked smile. If I could feel the shape of sound, I would stitch the edges of my mother's fraying sobs and tie weights to my sister's shallow sighs. Afterwards, I could have coffee with E minor, feeling safe in the knowledge that somebody was more of a miserable prick than I. Then crawl inside the thud of a drum and let it numb me to sleep. And in the morning, I could do it all again.
Thanks, Lana. Next is Niamh Toomey.
Sometimes I dial the number accidentally of a house that's no longer there. A house with an outside toilet around the back, full of cramped rakes and shuffling buckets. A house wearing flowers like an iron jumper and hedges I used to trim from a three-legged stool. A house of tanora, dirty cups and a leak in the kitchen roof. A house with a fireplace and granddad sitting beside, constantly poking the flames and throwing sweet wrappers in. A house with a deaf dog in a wiry grey coat called Trotty, though it's years since he could trot. A house where games of 45 spin round a centrepiece of dirty pennies. The number 021-436-2305 still rings in my ears.
Thanks, Steve. And the final reader of the night is Ciarán McCartney.
How's it going?
Hi, Will.
If you're around on the 10th of March, there's an event going on in Dali and Gala called The Crossover. I just launched it before I came in here. And it's like a collaboration between a lot of visual artists, a lot of musicians, and a lot of poets and wordsmiths of all kinds. And there's five slots, and then each of the slots involve a collaboration of those musicians. Tickets are €12, and they're on sale up in Alchemy. So if you're coming along. Speaking of Alchemy, wrote this poem in Alchemy. I was having one of those days, you know, where you're sitting there and you're going to send a few poems out here or there. And the International 5-Word Poetry Competition was there looking at me. So I tried to enter it and then realised I didn't have a fiver in my account to enter the competition. So this poem is has the punchy title of the poem that was priced out of contention. Of Physical Wales five-word international poetry competition. The words were alone, whisk, invent, relative, and luck. It happens alone, moments of cosmic ingenuity, space given to the slow thought, waiting to drip on to your tongue, a palette for performance, an oration of the inward, feel it coming, the swelling mix of your week's experience whisked into last week's addition to the week before's. Air beaten into it, wind whistling past stalactite tonsils, the breeze of your breath bred to invent the future focus of the minds in earshot. Just a thought, but your thought shared, appear among relative ideas, calm breath quelling fears, an equal in peaceful airspace. Crafted and styled, conjured and wild, unique your expression and just your look.
Thanks, Jerome. We'll get another round of applause for everyone on the open mic. And another round of applause for our guest tonight, Joel Dean.